This is your host, Mark McNeese, and you're listening to Your Right Path, a podcast about all things writing. Join me for conversations and interviews with authors, journal keepers, autobiographers, workshop facilitators, and more. Every life is a story, and each of us is the storyteller. Welcome to the podcast. This is your host, Mark McNeese, and I hope to be bringing you interesting and engaging interviews with authors and workshop facilitators and people in this whole orbit of what I'm doing with Your Right Path. And my first one today is with an author named Bruce W. Bishop, who I've known for a while and interviewed before, actually. And then I had the very great pleasure of meeting him in Halifax when my husband Frank and I went on a cruise. Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Mark.
And just tell us a little bit about where you are. I said you're in Halifax, but we're going to talk a little bit later about your new book, which is in Toronto. So give us the 411 a little bit on you.
Sure. I'm in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, on the country's east coast. And as you mentioned, you stopped here on a cruise. It's becoming a very popular cruise ship destination in the summer. Actually right up until October when the leaves turned. So I was happy to also meet you guys in person. I've been a writer pretty much my whole life. I'm in my mid-60s now. I started publishing probably after university in my 20s, sporadically at first, and then later as pretty much a full-time freelance travel and lifestyle writer. I didn't get into publishing fiction, self-publishing fiction, until the advent of COVID in 2020. And honestly, haven't really looked back since then. So it's been a busy time.
Are you still giving tours?
Yeah, I work sporadically or part-time with a company based out of New Orleans, which is called Bespoke Experiences, and they design tours for people, one-on-one tours in various destinations around North America, and Halifax being one of the more recent additions to their portfolio.
Well, I really like Halifax. I think it's very cool. I also like Toronto, but I haven't been there in about 20 years. Now, you said you had started this this writing venture with COVID, but that's a lot of book. You have three books in a series. We're going to get to the new one, but you have three books, which is How I Met You. An engrossing the family storytelling. Is it a trilogy, or are there going to be more?
No, it's a trilogy, and I think it pretty much stopped with Undeniable Relations. So it started off with Unconventional Daughters, which I wrote in 2020, followed that up with Uncommon Sons in 2021, and then Undeniable Relations in 2022. So it is a trilogy. They're interlinked, which means that you don't really need to read one before the other or read in the sequence, although many people choose to start with the first one, Unconventional Daughters. Each storyline is different in each of the books in the trilogy. So you may see some recurring characters. The timing is different. For example, in the last book, in the third book, it happens 20 years after the middle book in the 1950s.
Well, in the first book, I'm just going to read briefly. It's set in the early 1920s when a widowed mother and her adult daughter vie for the attention of the same man. Tension escalates and threatens to destroy their family. I like historical fiction a lot. Some of my favorite writers write historical fiction, and a couple of them are my friends. How did you go about researching your books?
Well, with the first one, with Unconventional Daughters, it really stemmed from an actual incident that happened in Nova Scotia in the 1920s. I had some letters given to me when I was only 18 years old, and the letters were written in the 1920s by a young woman who had in effect married her stepfather. And these letters were her honeymoon letters that she was writing home to her mother in Nova Scotia. So just imagine a girl of about 19 or 20 writing letters on her honeymoon to her mother, and they've both married the same man. Wow. Now that actually happened, and when I kept these letters really for about 40 years, I sat on them not knowing what to do with them. And even though they didn't give me a whole plot line or a whole storyline, they certainly gave me the inspiration to develop a whole family, very unorthodox, kind of a twisted family relationship. And I ran with it. I loved doing it. In exploring this family, basically starting off in 1883 and going up until 1935. And that's the first book.
Are you going to miss the characters?
That's a great question. I already do in a way, but you have to turn, pardon the pun, you have to turn the page. I think every writer does, and move on to a new set of characters. And I hope that I'm doing that with my new release.
Yes, I did. I moderated a panel this week on Monday at the Hoboken Library, which is in New Jersey. Anybody who has not heard of Hoboken? And it was with the Mystery Writers of America. I'm on the board there for the New York chapter. And it was about writing a series. And mm-hmm. one of the questions was, how do you know how to end it? And then it's kind of like, how do you let go? How do you turn the page? And I think those of us who write series all have to come to terms with that. I'm ready. You know, at some point with some of these series, you're just ready to move on. Were you ready to move on?
Oh, absolutely. I loved all the characters. It's magic how they kind of come out of nowhere in some ways, and you create them. But yeah, it was just time. It was like when friends enter your life in your teens or your 20s. Well, they may not be your friends when you're in your 40s, 50s, and 60s and beyond. So even characters come into our lives for sometimes a finite amount of time.
Now, that's going to lead us into your new book, which seems very different, but at the same time, it has that kind of historical fiction writing that you do. It's mm-hmm. called Grow Up, Rory Rafferty. It's both a coming-of-age story and a coming-out story told from the perspective of young Rory Rafferty. It takes place in 1979 in Toronto, a city and time the author knows well. It shows in his vivid details and I'm actually reading my review in the moment narrative. Now, with your writing, I just feel like I'm right there. I want to hear about the inspiration for this book. Do you consider it young adult? What are your thoughts about it? What inspired it? And how did you go about writing it?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think I was absolutely intrigued remembering the days before the internet. And that's really how it started. It's like, oh gosh, things seem to be so innocent and so whatever before the advent of emails and the internet and online everything and our lives revolving around that. And it occurred to me a few months back, well, actually about a year ago, that good Lord, I was 40 when I received my first email address, a Yahoo address in 1999. So it's like, but what about, do I remember clearly how life was like in my 20s, in my early 20s in particular? And are the kids or young people, young adults, are they feeling the same way today as I did in the late 1970s? And, you know, let's see the similarities, let's see the differences. And was it a more innocent time or not? So that's really how it began, I suppose.
What's your answer to that question?
I think it was a simpler time. Yeah. It may not have been a more innocent time, but it was certainly a simpler time. It was when people still wrote handwritten letters, when cursive writing was the only, you'd be taught how to write in cursive, when the world order didn't seem as crazy. as it is today. So yeah, simpler, but no less complicated, I suppose, for young people.
Well, especially because they're also dealing with their emotions and their identities. Mm-hmm. But I think just looking at what has happened to societies around the world, not just ours or Canada's, there was a time when, this is tangential, I'll have to say that, but there was a time when, as a nation, whatever nation you're living in, where you had certain agreed upon truths, and you had news sources. It's not that I long for the days when there were only three networks, but I'll tell you, people actually agreed that some things were true. We agreed on certain facts, and the internet and social media especially have just destroyed that. So now I think we're living in a time where people have their own sets of facts, and even I'm guilty now of withdrawing from what I call corporate media, because I just can't deal with it anymore. And maybe I'm running the risk of being in a bubble. But anyways, this all goes back to the fact that I think when before the internet, because it was supposed to be the big savior, you remember? The internet was supposed to connect us all, and it was going to be unregulated, and it would be sources of truth and information. And I just happen to think that we are living through the very dark side of all of this. Is this a series?
I can't say for sure. I think it may be, because I've got the idea for a follow-up book. But I've got to be pragmatic here too. If this book isn't attractive to enough readers to make me want to write a second book, then it could become a standalone. So honestly, Mark, I don't know the answer to that yet. If there is going to be part two and maybe part three, then I want it to be chronological. In other words, part two would be the early 80s, 1981, 82, 83, 84. And then maybe part three would be the later 80s. I find I like to write about 20th century history. It's what I'm most comfortable with, what I lived in. And I test myself to go back to those times and not fool myself either. I want to make sure that every single thing I write in my books is as factually accurate as possible. And perhaps that is a way to combat, as you say, all the untruths, all the ridiculousness and the fakery of corporate media today.
Did you go back to Toronto?
Well, I did, but that was about 3 years ago, three years ago, for a wedding. So I didn't go super recently. But when I went back two, 3 summers ago and looked at my old apartment buildings and the old neighborhood and that sort of thing, it was, I won't say unrecognizable, but Toronto has become, and it always has been, Canada's largest city. So it's sort of like our New York. And you can get lost very, very easily in a city with that many neighborhoods and a population of about 5 million.
Well, we're still hoping you make it this way at some point.
I hope so, too.
Now, we were at Hoboken on Monday, and it's like, I don't miss the city. We moved out here to, the house is rural, but we're not far from Lambertville, some really, really cool towns, but it's not a big city at all by any stretch of the imagination. And going back into even Hoboken, which is across the river from Manhattan, it's like, I don't miss it. I just don't miss that life. You know,
I don't either. After being in Toronto from 1979 to 2004, it's almost like I had my fill. You know, like when we leave our characters behind, it's like, okay, that was cool and that was fun and that was nice. And I met some fabulous people and wonderful, had wonderful times, but now it's time to go home. And I went home for family reasons initially in 2004, but when I moved to Halifax in 2017, I think it was, I came back I came back to a much smaller city where I had gone to university, and I love this city very much. It's less than 500,000 people. And it's walkable, it's safe. The climate may be surprising to a lot of your American listeners, but the climate is really, really good, even compared to Toronto. So
can we move there?
You know, housing is an issue at the moment. It's really tough to find a decent apartment, and houses, the price of houses has gone way up.
Then I guess we'll just have to stay. I understand what you're talking about too, in terms of a return on your creative investment, because if a book doesn't do as well as you hope it will, or it's not necessarily, it doesn't really merit the time to write another one. Because I did that with a book recently about a warlock. I love the book. I just love it to pieces, but it's not selling. And I made the mistake of setting it out as, first it was going to be three books. And then after I wrote the first one, I said, no, I'm going to do a duology, which like nobody even knows that that's a thing, but it is. It's two books, because I wrote the first one and I ended it on a cliffhanger deliberately, because I put it out there as a, you have to, you know, there's a second book coming. And then it's like, it's not doing real well. And it's like, God damn it, Mark. If you had ended it as so that it could be a standalone, I wouldn't be faced with this. It doesn't mean I have to write the second book, but I have that in like eating away in my head. But I certainly understand. It's like, that's what I like about some of the horror stuff that I've written, because they are standalones. And if it's a standalone, mm-hmm. you can just move on to the next thing.
Right.
And not have it in the back of your head. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's like a TV series. I mean, there's some TV series that seem to go on forever, and they might call it a limited series. They might call it a mini series, but honest to God, if you've got five seasons or up to 9 or 10 seasons of the same characters, get over yourself, you know, like it's time to
close. A lot of those things, like Modern Family, was at least three seasons too long. And we watched the Ryan Murphy series with about Truman Capote, and it's like, it might have been 10 episodes, but like it could have been 5. There's mm-hmm. no reason to like keep torturing us with this character who is a truly despicable human being. But that aside, there's a lot of things that don't need to be as long as they are. What's your writing routine? I'm going to bring it to a close here, but what's your writing life like?
Well, I just set my mind to, you know, now it's time to do another novel, and I don't time myself. I probably do more writing in the morning than I would later in the day. But at the same time, I'm, as they say, a pantser, not so much a plotter. Mm-hmm. I plot in the sense that I kind of know where the story will be going from beginning to end, unlike John Irving, who always says that he knows what the last page is going to be in the last sentence. I don't know where I'm going with it, but I will give myself a time limit, a deadline of maybe about 6 months to do a half-decent first draft. But I tend to, unlike other writers, I do tend to go back and edit what I've written the day before or even the day before that. So everybody has their own methodology, I guess.
Yeah, I go back and I'll get stuck and I'll go back and polish. I guess you call mm-hmm. it a rewrite. I don't change the story almost ever, but I will polish. I'm doing that again because it gets my momentum going again, especially mm-hmm. when I get stuck. But it also gives me a pretty much finished manuscript after I've polished it, you know, 5, 6, 7 times. And then the pantser versus plotter thing came up too on the panel, because we had a couple of pantsers, and we had one like absolute plotter. You know, she's none of us like the term writer's block, but she doesn't believe in it because she outlines like everything. Like I said, I can't do that. I will lose interest. If I don't start writing fairly soon in a story, I just lose interest. I don't want to sit there and map, you know, outline everything. That's crazy. But I'm a hybrider. I'll do like 3 or 4 chapters outline, and then I write them, and then I do that with the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how are you doing with promoting the book?
Well, we're into that, the dead zone, I guess. But the promotions are going well. I have another interview tomorrow with a Canadian TV program. I've done a couple of short radio spots already, but it's early days. I mean, I purposely released it on October 31st because I just wanted that date to stick in my mind. So it's only been available for about 2 weeks now. And I haven't, I haven't begun yet to expand the distribution. At the moment, it's on Amazon and it's on Kobo. Sure. And I'm hoping in 2025, I'll have the momentum and the sales to be able to expand it with Ingram Spark and Barnes & Noble and all the rest, Draft to Digital. But as I say, I really want to see if this is going to work because it's a departure for me. I don't know yet who my audience might be. I'm speaking at my alma mater next Tuesday night to a group of 20-year-olds and the St. Mary's Pride Society. So we'll see how that goes. And the book launch, the formal book launch, is on Sunday, this coming Sunday afternoon in downtown Halifax.
Well, best of luck with that. I think it's a delightful book, and I hope people will check it out and read it and just introduce themselves to your writing, which I love. It's called Grow Up, Rory Rafferty by Bruce W. Bishop. Check it out. Please check out Bruce's other books, too. And you can tell by the interview that he's a really nice guy. And if I said he's super talented, that's what more recommendation could you possibly need?
Well, Mark, those are very, very kind words, and I'm in awe of the amount of work that you do nonstop. It's, you know, if you're not writing, you're delivering workshops, and if you're not doing that, you're writing a script.
Well, the workshops, the workshops. That's like a movie. It's another phase in my life because I'm not going to write books forever. I don't even know that I'm going to write them much longer, but mm-hmm. I wanted to take my life experience and do something new with it. So right, doing workshops and discovering that I'm actually pretty good at it and people really like it. And I've been invited to do them at libraries, and I do I run an adult writers group at the New Hope Library. So this is a new and wonderful thing for me, and I'm 66. So I welcome having something new to do with my life.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's all just cyclical, and every day is an adventure, and you know,
and we're the same age, so there you go. I mean, we're just in our taking baby steps into all these new things. I gave a weekend workshop last year for fiction writers, and I couldn't believe it. I had a waiting list. And
wow,
you just don't expect that to happen when you try these new things. But if we don't keep at it, then hey, what's the alternative? So
yeah. Well, Bruce,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on and talking to me again. I know we're going to talk again, and someday
I'll be in New York.
Walk, you're going to say, "I'm coming to New York." We'll pick you up. I don't know that we're going to meet you there.
Yeah, I want to get down. I have a sister who lives in Naples, Florida. So while she's still there, maybe I'll, you know, do the side trip to
or just go to Philly. I even like Philly even better, and it's 45 minutes from here. So,
okay, there's an idea.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care of yourself. Bye bye.
Yeah, have a good day.
You've been listening to Your Right Path with host Mark McNeese. Enjoy conversations and interviews with writers about writing, and be sure to check out everything I do at YourRightPath.com.